Good morning. Welcome to this meeting of the House Local Government Committee. The Chair Mason is probably having trouble logging in this morning, so I'm Steve Elkins, the Vice Chair, and we'll get this show on the road. Today is January 27, 2021. The meeting is being held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take the attendance by roll.
Chair Sandra Mason.
Here, present.
There she is.
To add technical difficulties.
Vice Chair Elkins.
Present.
Representative Quam.
Present.
Representative Berg.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Meckland.
Present.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Joaquin.
Present.
All members are present.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
We do.
Madam Chair, I'll move the approval of the minutes from the meeting of January 20th, 2021.
Thank you. Are there any additions or corrections? All those in favor say aye.
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 Okay, opposed, same signs. The minutes are approved as read. Thank you so much. Next, we're going to go to the Representative Elkins bill.
Yes, Madam Chair, I will move that House File 35 be recommended to be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee.
Okay, to your bill, Representative.
Yeah, so the first item is that we have a DE amendment to be offered. So when I originally filed the bill or requested that the bill be jacketed by the reviser, I forgot that last session we had a couple of versions of this bill. The first version had the grants being administered by the Department of Administration. And then later the Council on Disabilities became comfortable with the idea of administering the grants themselves. And so we had a later bill in the last session, House File 3000, that showed them as the administrator. So I mistakenly requested the rejacketing of the bill with the Department of Administration being the administrator instead of the one with the Council on Disabilities being the administrator. So this amendment basically brings the bill into line with the most recent version that has the Council on Disabilities being the administrator of the grant program, and that's the main change being implemented through this delete all amendment.
Okay. All those in favor of approving the DE amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. You now have the bill in the shape that you want it. Proceed.
Yes, I do. Okay, I'm going to share my screen. And, oops, where did it go? Well, that's interesting. Hold on one second here. Okay. Okay, can everyone see the PowerPoint presentation?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay. Great. So what this bill does, it establishes a grant program to provide funding for small cities and counties to help them make their websites more accessible to people with disabilities and bring them into compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act. The grant program would be administered by the Metropolitan Minnesota Council on Disabilities. The League of Minnesota Cities and the Association of Minnesota Counties are working with the Minnesota Council on Disabilities and the MNIT Office of Accessibility to provide training and support for this initiative. We're requesting initially as a placeholder $1 million. The final amount, of course, will depend on the State Government Finance Committee's budget target, which we'll learn later in the year. So the bill is supported by the Minnesota Council on Disabilities, Association of Minnesota Counties, the League of Minnesota Cities, and the Minnesota Association of Small Cities. And today we will have testifying, first of all, if Noah is here, Noah McCourt, who is a self-advocate. Noah is at the very highly performing end of the autism spectrum disorder. He is passionate about this issue. And I first met Noah at a Council on Disabilities legislative event 2 years ago. I don't think I'd even been sworn in yet. And he gave a very, passionate speech at this meeting. At that meeting. And afterwards, I approached Noah and told him that I was willing to work with him on this issue. And the two of us have been friends ever since. So many of you know Noah. In the normal times, he's a regular presence here in the Capitol. And let's see, is Noah present?
Yet.
Noah, are you on right now, on yet? Not yet, okay. Well, we'll have to come back to Noah, I guess. The second presenter is Leah Patton with the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Minnesota County IT Leadership Association. And I'm pretty sure I saw Leah on the call. Leah, you want to take it away?
Yes. Can you hear me okay, everyone?
Yeah.
We can. Please identify yourself and proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Leah Patton. I am here testifying on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Minnesota County IT Leadership Association, which represents about 65 of the IT directors around the county. So we have a twofer here. I'd like to take a minute to thank Representative Elkins and the advocates for involving the Association of Minnesota Counties and the IT Leadership Association in discussions around this bill for a couple of years now, I think, at this point. We believe that this grant program will be particularly helpful to smaller counties in Greater Minnesota in particular. In large part, those counties rely on vendors to build their websites, and they are reliant on those vendors in large part to assure that they are getting an accessible website. So that also requires staff time, if not a kind of set it and forget it mentality. You have to have staff that understand what's required of them in terms of accessibility and who have the time to do spot checks on that vendor website to make sure that they're actually getting what they've paid vendors for. So that does require some time and training. Accessibility, I think it's important to keep in mind, doesn't just apply to the website itself. It applies to all the content and all the forms, PDFs, anything that you put on your website is also required to be accessible. And that also requires staff time, even outside of technical staff, outside of IT staff, to be able to create an accessible PDF. Or when, if they have access to uploading content onto the website through their department or whatever, they also need to know this is what's required when you upload that particular piece of content to make it accessible. Particularly during COVID, counties have started to put even more content online, forms and things to make the county more accessible to their constituents at a distance. So the problem is becoming even more pressing, we think. Staff are doing their best, but it does just take a lot of time, and we're pretty squeezed for time in a lot of situations here. So we hope, coupled with ongoing education, we have already provided a workshop to our members at AMC and in my IT Leadership Association that I represent, to make sure people know how to create an accessible website, how to create accessible forms. But that's an ongoing discussion, and we hope to continue that in partnership partnership with the Council on Disability and Minnett's Office of Accessibility as well. And we believe that the bill will help us provide an accessible website to every community in the state, because an accessible website is just a good functioning website. So thank you for the opportunity to speak today, and I will stand for any questions.
Thank you. Why don't we hear from all our testifiers, and then we'll take questions.
Thank you.
Next, I have Trevor Turner from the Minnesota Council on Disabilities. Again, if you would identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Great. And I can see you.
Perfect. I'm Trevor Turner, and I'm the Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Council on Disability, and I'm really happy to be here to testify. One of the things that this bill does is gives the Minnesota Council on Disability the authority to administer these grants. And for us, that's a really exciting thing to do, to be able to build better relationships and stronger relationships with our local governments here in the state of Minnesota. And it allows us to, you know, serve as counsel and advisors to help, you know, improve accessibility across the state. I just wanted to say that, you know, the council is a strong supporter of, you know, the House File 35. This bill would provide grant funding to empower local governments with, you know, local tools and training needed to ensure that their digital presence is accessible to Minnesotans with disabilities. You know, as buildings need wheelchair accessible ramps and public signs need Braille alternative tech, so too does our public digital infrastructure need to be accessible for everyone. The digital realm is no longer private, it's no longer a privilege for some, it's a right for all. And Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act and Chapter 363A of the Minnesota Human Rights Act mandate that our government and services be accessible for everyone. And that must include the public digital space. And much of the government business nowadays is conducted digitally, and the COVID-19 pandemic has made explicitly clear how important digital access is for local governments and their residents to interact with each other, ranging from, you know, snow emergency alerts to informational videos on public health, applying for permit, paying taxes and fines, and most importantly, participating in local civic discourse. Accessible government, especially digital government, allows for people with disabilities to live independently in the community of their choice. The need is tremendous, but this bill is the right step forward. We appreciate the support of Representative Elkins and the local government division on this bill. And we will continue to engage with stakeholders, including local governments and advocates, to ensure the digital world is accessible for all. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Thank you. Next, we have Cap O'Rourke from the Minnesota Association of Small Cities.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, thank you. My name is Cap O'Rourke, and on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Small Cities and the League of Minnesota Cities, we would like to offer our support for this legislation. Many of our smaller cities, as the testifier said before, are having to work with third-party vendors to create their websites. And many other of our smaller communities simply don't have a website at all. So the need is great in throughout Minnesota and in smaller local units of local government to have additional resources to help them with their connectivity. I would say I do. My one concern is from the original bill to the delete all. I think we would. Right now, it's just simply a grant to the Disability Council to distribute these monies, and we would like to have some language in there that shows some guidelines as far as the goal is to reach out to these smaller units of government in greater Minnesota. Right now, it's just a grant to upgrade websites, and there are kind of no guidelines of what some of the goals are, and at least for outreach. So I'd like to work with the author and the advocates to kind of get some additional language just so we're clear on kind of some of that intent.
Thank you. Representative Elkins, do you have a response?
Sure. I'm fine with that. That we'll be referring the bill back to state government finance, where it will be heard again, and I can work with the council and CAP and the cities on my perspective.
Okay, thank you. Has Mr. McCourt come forward yet?
Uh,
Okay.
Doesn't sound like it. So I think we'll have to move on, which is unfortunate because Noah is a very effective advocate for himself and other people with disabilities on this issue. So it's a shame that he can't be there with us this morning. So one thing I should add is that, because I know it'll be the first question that Representative Quam will ask is, what's the status of this bill in the Senate? And so we've had some issues with getting yellow jackets back and forth between the state office building and the Minnesota Senate building, but Senator Mark Corin, who was the chair of the Senate IT committee, will be our Senate sponsor. The bill is in the hopper and will be in the Senate bill introductions this week.
Okay. I see that Representative Olson has his hand up.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. If this is an appropriate time to ask a question, I think it's directed to Mr. Turner. What I'm looking at, so I have some experience as an educator. We spent the last year taking training on how to develop websites that are accessible to all individuals, regardless of the disabilities, and it is actually an arduous task. It truly is difficult to make a website, to design your own website that will provide the necessary information to every human being who needs it. So it is a huge thing. At the same time, as the mayor of a town, I know my city, it does go through a third-party vendor to provide a website, as Cap was saying. At the same time, how do we ensure that this money is going towards actually accomplishing what we want? How will the Minnesota Council on Disabilities, how will they send out the money? How will they ensure that the city of Elmore, Minnesota doesn't just use the money to pay for its yearly subscription and upkeep for its website, but actually moves forward and provides the accessibility that is desperately needed in many of these small cities?
Yeah, absolutely. I think
Mr. Turner. Oops,
sorry.
Proceed.
I think that the one thing that we just have to consider is that the bill does establish a council, an advisory council, so that an application process. So cities will have to submit an application in order to receive the funding, and they'll have to explicitly say in the application where that money is going. And then we, of course, will have our ADA director and myself included, being able to check in on the website and as well as our advisors to make sure the website actually meets the standards of accessibility. So I believe that this money and this advisory council will allow us to have those kind of checks and balances to ensure that those websites are accessible. And I would also like to say that it is a challenge sometimes to make things accessible, but I do firmly believe that not only is it the right thing to do, but I always like to tell people that sometimes when you keep disability in mind and you are trying to make things more accessible, it generally tends to benefit most people, if not all people. So I think that sometimes the initial front-loading work to put into it is worth it, because in the long run, you actually make your website more accessible for everyone, not just people with disabilities.
Representative Elkins, did you have any comments?
No, I looked at the City of Elmore's website. It looks really nice. And I actually ran it through a public accessibility checker, and it scored pretty well. I'll send you the links, Representative Olson.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a few questions for the author, and then, the testifiers can assist where needed. My understanding is the legislature is fully compliant. Can we get an understanding of the tools and techniques being utilized now to be compliant?
We can. In fact, once we've kind of conducted our business, I'd like to address that a little bit, because this presentation actually was prepared using a template that our staff prepared according to the state accessibility guidelines. And this is the very first time this template is being used in the legislature, but I ran the presentation itself by Elaine Settergren, who prepared it, created it for us, and she gave it the thumbs up. So we can talk a little bit more about that at the end if you'd like.
Representative Quam, you have an, I believe you have an amendment. Do you want to move that forward?
Madam Chair, I would like to get additional questions and information on the underlying bill.
Okay.
And so my understanding is that we already have the mechanisms, the tools, and the capabilities at the state level. Did the author ever look at leveraging that? In the testifier discussion, they talked about that they would have access to everybody's website to be able to do stuff. So if we already have that intent for connectivity and accessibility, why not leverage the state tools and funding that's already in place and personnel to assist in this process? And that way we can have uniformity across all of the local governments supporting the websites.
Yeah, so
Representative Elkins.
Yeah, so the direct support for cities and counties, other units of government, isn't within Minute's charter, but nonetheless, I have on the screen here now, the Minute has an Office of Accessibility that the information that they provide is widely used throughout state government at all levels. There's a link to their accessibility website here as well. But in addition to that, the Council on Disabilities and the League of Minnesota Cities also have good training resources available to cities as well. And I expect that all of those existing resources will be effectively used as we roll out this grant program.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you. I must not have been eloquent enough in stating the question. The question wasn't about resources to reference and et cetera. The question was, we have existing processes and tools and capability at the state level. And if the bill so wished, and we the legislature wished, we could make that accessible to the local governments, the smaller entities, so we could have uniformity and compliance, so that when something new came up, it's like, wow, this tool is awesome, or this product is awesome. It could be, I guess, initiated right away and across the board. And that way we don't have the problem of, you know, they're sort of here, or this isn't the same. No, by having the state government leverage its size to provide access to the tools and the resources to be able to make it accessible, because all residents of the state of Minnesota should have access to the documentation, procedures, and policies of local government with, you know, the minutes of the meetings, those type of things. And if we truly want to have the state rise to the level, and it's been said that the legislature is conforming, then we already have an existing process, tool set, et cetera, there. And, you know, instead of granting out and picking individual entities, why don't we, you know, with this bill, leverage the critical mass of the state to be able to uniformly help all of the small cities, all of the small local governments to have that access. And I think that would be a better, more efficient way, because you've got people that are expert at it instead of doing it as a part-time thing. So has there been any discussions with the author and the parties about doing it that way?
Representative Elkins.
Madam Chair, there are good uniform guidelines, but every unit of government at every level of government has different content on their websites that is customized to the needs of their own constituencies. And as Representative Olson testified, this is a lot of actual work for each unit of government to put their the websites into conformance. There's no one size fits all template that can be used for Minneapolis, Bloomington, and Elmore. Even if you've got a good set of consistent guidelines, which the Minute Office of Accessibility, the League of Minnesota Cities, the Council on Disabilities itself are providing those good guidelines and templates, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done on a website by website basis in order to make sure that that website is conforming to these guidelines. And most importantly, to the Americans with Disabilities Act, because this isn't a nice to have, this is a legal requirement. And if Mr. McCourt were here this morning, you would learn that one of his hobbies is suing local governments because their websites aren't accessible.
Madam Chair. I believe that, okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Frankly, I would assume that, you say there's different, the content of what's on a Word document, a PDF, a spreadsheet, etc., is going to vary. But if you're using the internet, and you're using, whether it's Office or one of the other products, it's the tools to convert that to accessible format that should be universal. I think there's been years of minute presentations indicating the diversity of the products, the platforms, et cetera, across state government. So I would be shocked if Minute doesn't have the expertise to understand the different applications being used, WordPress, et cetera. So I think that is a non-argument. Your testifiers already stated that they would have access to the websites to monitor, help, assist, etc. Well, if you have that, then you already have outside connectivity to be able to do the process of, we've got our PDFs here, we've got our Word documents, etc., etc., etc. The state has the expertise and already has the tools for converting them into accessibility across the board, because I guess we've under the assumption that the legislature is already doing that. And so therefore, instead of having individual local government entities be going through a grant process, which burns, according to the bill, 15% for overhead, I think it would behoove to do the approach of which we allowed the assistance at the state level for helping to have access to the tools to convert for accessibility. And that's what's confusing me with this bill. And is that something that the author would look into, trying to take this bill the next step and having the state provide that across the board, the local government support to help our citizens, help our residents to have a uniform accessibility to their governments?
So let me draw an analogy here. Thank you, Madam Chair. This PowerPoint document was created using a template provided by the state. So this is what Elaine adapted for me, was based on the state's basic accessibility template for PowerPoint. But I didn't push a button in it to make it accessible. I had to follow a six-page document explanation that I got from Elaine that explained to me how to use this tool in order to compose a presentation that would be digitally accessible. That was manual effort in my part to do that. There is no such tool that just takes any document and you push a button and magically it suddenly becomes accessible. That's just something that takes effort to and conscientious effort to do by an individual composing a document or a web page. There is no magic button.
Madam Chair.
Just a reminder there, I do want to make sure we have time for the presentation. Representative Kwan.
Well, Madam Chair, I believe that you and I and many of us through the years have sat through presentations and discussions about how you can convert, documents. But you say that we got the resources existing, and why aren't we allowing that capability? So you're saying
that
we don't have staff because not. Madam Chair, can I complete?
Sorry, go ahead.
We've had testimony in which there is staff in the legislature that works to take the documents that are submitted to our committees. Now, everyone that submits testimony and documents for a hearing isn't going through this training. So there are tools that are being utilized by the legislature to do exactly what the author mentioned isn't the intent of this. And my asking is, why is it not the intent that we use the existing techniques and resources that we're doing in the legislature to leverage so that local governments can have this accessibility? Because I don't know of... I don't know of anyone coming to me over the last decade plus and saying legislature to be accessible, all of my documents that I generate or my testifiers generate have to be pre-generated in a format. And so, we know how to do it. We've been doing it for years. And we're compliant, let's let the small local governments access that. That's all I'm asking.
Representative Elkins.
Yeah, so to the extent that the documents that our staff is producing are compliant with digital accessibility requirements, it's because people like Elaine are training the staff on how to author accessible documents. It's not because there's a tool that automatically and magically renders them accessible. It's because our staff has been trained by Elaine and her colleagues on how to create accessible documents.
Representative Quam?
That has not been present to staff across or, in committees, because we all know the self-appointed lobbyist that an advocate that would come and testify before the committee. And during those discussions, some of our techniques that we're using of converting materials to be accessible. Now, maybe there's some state resources that would be involved in that. And so that you'd have someone doing it on a more full-time basis, and that would be more productive and efficient in doing that. And that, I think, would be a better approach than taking a town of a few hundred people and a part-time position person converting. That's what I'm saying, is if we truly as a state are going to leverage our support and do this right, I think that would be a better approach as a more of a service to our local cities and governments than saying, oh, we're going to train you through grants. And I think there's a little bit more difficulty factor in there for the small cities. So thank you.
Okay. I think Representative Pablo, why don't we take this discussion offline, and I'll set up some time that you and I and Elaine can have a discussion of, about the training that is done for legislative staff on how to create accessible documents and how that process works, and then we can reconvene the discussion when that when the bill gets to state government finances, if you'd like.
Representative Quam.
I'm fully interested in that. I'll have my new LA, trying to arrange that. And I'll also ask him when he received the training you're talking about.
Yeah, Elaine offers the training every year, and you don't have to attend, but it's strongly encouraged, and most of the people who attend are our legislative staff.
Thank you. Representative Quam, just to confirm, so you are not going to offer the amendment at this point?
Madam Chair, I have not stated that. I just wanted to have a better understanding of the author's vision and how this bill might evolve. I'm still intent. Well, I can wait till the next committee to bring it up, but I really need to, the whole intent of the amendment is that every resident of Minnesota should be able to have accessibility to the policies and procedures of its governments. This bill is made to increase the accessibility for people that have a need for an alternative format. The issue is we can have this bill go through, but if we don't ensure that the actual information that they need and require is present. And the intent of the amendment is to say the procedures, policies, the local government information ought to be accessible. And this bill's intent is accessibility. And I just want to have the content as part of that accessibility. So I will work with the author, and I believe a few of the testifiers have made comments that they would like tweaks or changes, but I will not step down from working to get the content accessible. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I would not be then offering that amendment at this committee at this time.
Okay, thank you. I am not seeing any other hands at this point. So Representative Elkins, final words.
I think this is a very worthwhile program. I'd urge you to support the motion, which I'll make now, that we reiterate the motion that we're referring this bill back to the Committee on State Government Finance and Elections with a recommendation to pass. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The clerk will take the roll. Josh?
Sorry about that. I think I must have done the inverse there. Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Quam?
Aye.
Representative Berg? Representative Bolden.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Joaquin.
Aye.
Representative Berg.
Aye.
We have 9 ayes, Madam Chair.
Okay. The motion prevails, and so this will be sent up to state government finance and policy.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you for committee.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. By any chance, did Noah ever come into the list over here? I'm not seeing it. I wanted to give him one last chance. Okay. Our presentation today is from the Builders Association of Minnesota. So if Ms. Kelleher would like to come forward, identify yourself and proceed. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's a pleasure to be here today. And before I start, Madam Chair, I just want to tell you, working with your staff is greatly appreciated. They are so professional and helpful. You should be very happy with them. It makes it easy to be on this side of the screen.
But, thank you, and I am.
I appreciate you giving us the opportunity to come in front of you today. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Builders Association of Minnesota, or as we like to term it, BAM. Joining me today is Mike Paradise from Bigelow Homes. He is a builder from Rochester, Minnesota. Let me tell you a little bit about the Builders Association. We are a statewide business association representing the home building industry. Our membership is nearly 1,600 members, and it's made up of home builders, remodelers, developers, subcontractors, suppliers, realtors, financial institutions, and other industry relating to businesses. BAM's members join our association through one of our 12 local associations across the state. And when they join our association, they have access to code guides, legal templates, legislative advocacy, insurance, regulatory representation, and legal protection. Let me tell you, the construction industry in Minnesota in 2020 faced some daunting challenges. Obstacles included soaring lumber prices, scarcity of materials, and pandemic-related supply chain disruptions, which all our builders wrestled with to meet the housing needs of Minnesotans. Even with these challenges, permits for single-family homes in the 13-county metro area closed out the year roughly 5% ahead of 2019. One observation I had as I took on my new role here at BAM was to look at building codes and building licenses. And I did provide the committee with a map of Minnesota. You should have it forwarding, but there's only 21 counties in the state that have building code inspectors and check to see if builders are licensed. I always assumed when we passed good law at the Capitol that it applied to everybody statewide. That is not the case with this. Do I have the right answer? Do I know exactly how we should do this? No, but I'm addressing all of you in hopes we could come up with a way to ensure Minnesotans get the homes, the remodeling they deserve. Lastly, members, I appreciate your attention, but I'm fortunate enough to have a builder and a developer with me who has served his community and our state in various positions. And he can share with you his impressions of the building climate in Minnesota. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mike Paradise, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Paradise. And again, if you would introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Mike Paradise. I'm the president of Bigelow Homes. We're a home building development company in the Rochester area. I'm also one of the past presidents of BAM. So I have been to the legislature before testifying back when I was in the role of president, and I really like the parking issue today a lot better than when I was coming up to the Capitol. So, but anyways, we're a builder in Rochester. Bigelow Homes It's probably one of the largest builders in southern Minnesota. We closed 158 units last year. Our average purchase price was $300,000. So a lot of our housing was workforce housing. We've done a combination of both single family homes and twin homes, townhomes. So currently we build in Rochester and nine other towns surrounding Rochester. And some of my concerns, and Grace is correct, the business out there is good. I'm not here to complain about business, but it's been very challenging. And I think on the horizon, I see some issues that need to be addressed, if at all possible. But of course, our biggest concerns are right now, my concerns are material costs. And if you don't know, some of our material has went up over 200% in the last year. So on a $300,000 home, the lumber cost is up almost $20,000 on a single home. So fortunately for us, our interest rates are incredibly low. So it gives a lot of buyers more buying power. But unfortunately, a lot of that buying power is gobbled up by the increase in costs. Supply chain still remains to be an issue. In some instances, our trusses, which are pre-built floor and roof systems, have held up jobs 2, 3, 4 weeks. I've even heard of some smaller builders in the area not even being able to get trusses at this time. So, and then of course, the other issue is our labor force. That's been an issue for a while. It'll continue to be an issue, and I'm sure you'll hear more from BAM about our efforts to change education or promote trades as a career. Because I myself started in a carpentry program back in 1979 and became a master carpenter. And today I'm the president of one of the largest building companies in southern Minnesota. So the other issue that we have is a lack of inventory, both from a builder standpoint and even if you're trying to buy an existing home. So the reason for, from the new construction, there's a lack of inventory in our area is actually a few items. One is the labor force, lack of a labor force. The other, of course, is our supply chain issues. And one of the largest ones, and it's probably one of the ones that continue to plague us, is our lot inventory. So as a builder, we can only build homes if we have a buildable lot. So it all starts with the lot. It all starts with the land. It all starts with the development process. So because of that, your different communities have the lack of lots will have an impact on the amount of permits and homes that are built. In Rochester, and of course, everybody knows we've been on a growth spurt in Rochester for 20 plus years, and we're forecasted to be on a growth spurt for another 20 or 30 years. Our building permits in Rochester have declined the last 3 years in a row. As a matter of fact, in 2020, only 266 permits for new construction single family were pulled in Rochester. At our peak, we were building almost 1,000 homes a year in Rochester. So that is a big concern. One of the things that I've noticed also as we bring lots online in different communities and in Rochester, the process itself, the cost to bring the lots online, produces more expensive lots. So in the end, you see more expensive homes. So unfortunately, we've seen a trend in Rochester where the single family homes are getting larger and more expensive. And the only thing that becomes affordable is the apartments that continue to be built in Rochester. And one, Rochester was fortunate enough to hire a Maxfield study. Rochester, Olmsted County, and the Housing Coalition hired Maxfield Research to do a housing analysis of Olmsted County. They came back and gave us some really great data about what our needs were in Rochester. And unfortunately, the lots we're bringing in aren't meeting the needs. So I think it becomes a community's goal, or we have to make an effort as a community to try to create lots that produce housing that meets the needs of the community. Now, I'm not here complaining about business. We're plenty busy, but the community needs a specific type of housing. And in order to support our job growth in Rochester and Olmsted County, we need a lot more workforce housing. So I think a lot of talks has to be done on both the local, state, and even national level about those. The other thing that we need to do is try to get our lots to market faster. That's another concern of mine. When we decide to start a project, it can very easily be 18 months to 2 years before the inception of the idea to the point where we're actually putting bricks and mortar on that job. So I think as a community, we need to identify the needs of the community, and then particular projects need to be fast-tracked if at all possible. I've, in my past as a president of the state association, we continually hear the argument from the builders that there's too many fees and too many restrictions. We continually hear the argument from the cities that if you want services, you need to pay the fees. It's time to get serious about that conversation and sit down and come to some middle ground. As a community, we need to make a commitment as far as creating affordable lots and meeting our needs. And when I talk about affordable lots, it's to meet whatever need the community has. Rochester, we have a huge need for active seniors. I'm an active senior, 4 children, all gone out of the house. So my wife and I live in a 5-bedroom home that would be great for a family. So what are we doing as a community to move those people out of that housing stock and getting these young families into it? So as we do that, we need to identify the needs of the community and help with all price ranges of housing so we have a healthy housing continuum. The study also realized in Rochester that we have a need for 18,000 homes by 2030, which is not unlike the report that the governor's task force did. And I was lucky enough to be a member on the governor's task force. The report came back and said the state of Minnesota needs 300,000 units by 2030. That's a lot of housing units. So I can't speak for the state, but as far as our community, Rochester, Homestead County, we're not keeping up. We need to do something. We need to try to figure out a way to create more units. So on just the state of the overall market, if you're in the market to buy a home, of course, it's not always new construction. You may look at existing homes. Currently in Rochester today, there's 99 single family homes for sale. That's it, in a town of over 100,000. So a healthy market in Rochester would be about a 6-7 month supply on the market at any given time. Currently we have about a 22-day supply. That's indicative across the state and across the nation. So we need to take a look at that. Because of that, it's driving the cost of housing up, not just new construction, but the median sales price in Rochester in 2010 was $150,000. 2020, our median house price was $260,000. So there's these pressures are having an incredible driving factor on these prices. And when we really talk about affordable housing, it goes across the whole housing continuum. So really quickly on codes, it wouldn't be proper if a builder didn't complain about building codes a little bit, but, and I'm not gonna complain a lot. I actually sit on the State Construction Codes Advisory Council, and I also participated in the work groups as they evaluated the codes. But the one thing that keeps me concerned about codes is the cost. And we just had an electrical code pass that added quite a bit of money to a single family home. And I'm not sure the due diligence was done to make sure that the costs were justified in the end. So as we continue, because you know there's nothing in this world we can't make a little better, a little safer at a more expensive cost. So we have to keep in mind as we continue through the code cycles that affordability has to be an issue, it has to be a concern. So, and I know the state has a lot to do with that, and I know the legislature has a lot to do with controlling how the state handles that. So in parting, I would just like to say, make sure that we are evaluating the cost of any changes from the building code standpoint. Then the last thing I'm going to say is one of the goals that came out of the governor's task force report, and it was a goal to commit to housing as a priority. And it said public-private partnership should forecast the demand, set goals, and measure progress. I think that is so important. We're lucky enough in our community to have actually set some goals. And I think as a state and even all of the communities around Rochester or around the state, and especially in greater Minnesota, to set some goals and measure the progress. And with that, I thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. We definitely know that there's probably is going to be a lot, an increase in population in Rochester because of the destination Medicare medical center program going on. And in my area, 300,000 is kind of, I guess it's considered affordable, which we know, is not really affordable, and housing is at a crisis all over the state. So I appreciate that the work that you've done and your comments, and it's an ongoing problem that we absolutely need to solve like yesterday. So definitely I'm open to that. I see that Representative Quam has his hand up. Proceed, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, I think I've heard of you before in the area, but talking about all these hundreds of thousands of dollar homes, meeting with you know, the local people working on housing, they are leveraging developments outside the high cost center of the city and partnering with smaller towns around. So the dollars for lots and in the home drop quite considerably. It might be nice if some of that information of regional sharing, so they're coordinating housing with some transportation links to Rochester, because Highway 14 has, or did have pre-pandemic, over 30,000 people driving in and 30,000 people driving out of the city each day. So I guess it'd be nice to have a bit of the rest of the story to the committee to look at the housing component with regional cooperating between different jurisdictions, and then you know, transportation considerations for people. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Paradise, did you have a response?
Yeah, and as I said, we build in 8 other communities besides Rochester. And right now that is probably a more economical solution. And it's because a lot of the land in Rochester, the easy stuff has been developed. And you experience that in all large towns, even in the metro area. Your smaller towns probably have some more cost-effective land to develop, but believe me, the small towns are also feeling the pinch. And it's not, the myth that it's a lot cheaper to build outside of Rochester is just that, a myth.
Interesting, thank you. Representative Meckland, then Representative Berg, and then Hoyt. Representative Meckland, proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is kind of to both Mr. Paradise as well as Kelleher from the BAM. This is something I'm pretty passionate about. I've been working on extensively for the last 2 years. I am a licensed builder as well, so I more than can feel your pain. And I'm aware that the business is certainly there, but the resources are definitely not. It was one of my biggest, guiltiest moments of running for the legislature and actually winning, because it was taking one more hammer swinger out of the equation. And there was plenty of people coming to me looking for work. Shortly after being elected 2 years ago, I had a lot of developers, builders, building officials reach out to me, many of those under the condition I would never give up their name, but they were concerned about different fees being charged, which is, you know, statutorily, it is to be fair and commensurate to the service that's provided. And quite a few of these municipalities are going far above and beyond. And not only that, but they're using some of that revenue for things that they're not allowed to, like fire trucks, city hall, redevelopments, what have you. We're seeing statewide a whole array of issues, different things, from, you know, park dedication fees to sack and whack fees rising heavily, to municipalities saying, no, we don't want lots that small. They have to be bigger, which reduces the number of lots in a given development. And the list goes on. But I could go on for the rest of the time that we have allocated here. But if either one of you two would be so kind as to reach out to me, I would love to take this offline. I do have legislation that we introduced last year, and it will be coming back as well. That might be helpful if you weren't aware of it. I can certainly bring you up to speed. So if either one of you, if Josh can forward my information to them, or if you can get me their information to my email, I'll be more than happy to reach out. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Kelleher or Mr. Paradise, do you want to respond?
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to reach out to Representative McClellan take a conversation offline and see what his legislation looks like going forward. Being a builder is not an easy task, as he just shared. So good, thoughtful legislation is important.
Okay, thank you. Next, I think it was Ms. Berg, Representative Berg, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of quick questions for Mr. Paradise. You mentioned challenges for a lack of skilled labor. And so to that point, I was wondering if you're working with the unions, both locally and statewide, to bring in workers. And then just secondly, and you may have mentioned this, I was wondering if there were specific initiatives or specific barriers to creating or supporting projects for affordable housing. Thank you.
Thank you.
So back to the workforce.
Mr. Paradise.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Right.
Madam Chair, members. Back to the workforce issue. Yeah, our associations are working with getting, for the educational piece, getting kids into the trade system. We have active programs in the Rochester area. So also, I personally participate in a speak to schools program where we go out and actually speak to kids in high school or even junior high to get them interested in the trades. I mean, being in the trades right now, these guys are making close to $100,000 on an annual basis in the trades. And it's important that we get that message out. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hoyt.
Can you hear me? There we go. Sorry, I had to come off of mute. So thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. This is always an exciting issue for me, and I'm still waiting for a visit from the home builders because we really need to work on this. I have 8 clients right now as a realtor that are paramedics, teachers, police officers, nurses, and they're brand new, and they qualify for $200,000 to $225,000 mortgage. There is not one house that we have found for them other than a townhome. These are individuals that we want in our neighborhoods. We have to work together on this. I had a great experience at one time in my life to meet Orrin Thompson. Orrin Thompson took a total different approach to building. I encourage anyone to study it because he worked with the VA. He found out what the specs were. He worked with the unions and the labor. And basically, he came up with a plan. His margins were not that great. He said that. But what he did was he built neighborhoods. The other thing I think we get caught up is in our builders getting involved with neighborhood associations. They are the first ones to create the associations and put very cumbersome things that neighborhoods don't need. We have air conditioning units. We have driveways. We have certain yards that have to go in, and that does raise the price of the house. What happened to getting a basic house and putting those things in afterwards? I need the builders to come forth and work with me and work with the other parts of the legislature to work through some of these. And I know land cost is there, and those are all obstacles that we can work on together. So I look forward to having you work together with legislators and both sides of the aisle, because we really need to get more affordable housing in place, not only for our new families, but for our senior families. I have senior citizens that come to me and say, John, I would sell my $500,000 house, but it's paid for, and to move into something, I'm going to pay $300,000. They don't want that. So we really have a lot of work to do here, and I'm a firefighter back years ago, and so I'm real big on codes. I think codes are like real estate and codes. There's always a lawsuit or something happened that make that happen. And so we always have to look at that too. So I think we can work together. I think we can work through the obstacles, and I'm looking forward to a visit. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any response to that?
Madam Chair, I can guarantee him a visit.
Ms. Kelleher.
I'll make it happen.
Okay, sounds good. And I can add something. I know there's a gentleman just up the street who about 2 years ago said he was going to, he's retired, walks his dog every day, and he was looking for just a really one floor house. He's given up looking. He just cannot afford anything out there. So it doesn't make any difference where you live. It's a problem throughout the state. Thank you. Representative Berg, did you have a response to that? I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually just really quickly did. I appreciate the work that you're doing, Mr. Paradise, within the school system. That's a huge part of my education platform, is a pathway to the trade for kids. Both my kiddos are dipping their toes in the trades right now. And as a longtime labor girl, I full on appreciate that. And then especially now that we heard from Representative Hewitt, just really quickly circling back to whether or not you have specific initiatives or barriers to the affordable housing. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Response to that, either Ms. Kelleher or Mr. Paradise. Mr. Paradise.
Madam Chair, members. The barriers to the affordable housing it's pretty much what I was speaking about earlier, all those items. The one item that I didn't touch on, and I'm glad to hear you have children that are in the trades, would be the next step after that, the new entrepreneurs that are going to build the next subdivisions. It was interesting, I had a conversation with one of our local consultants, and he told me 15, 20 years ago, he worked with 75 different developers and builders in the Rochester area. Today, they're working with 10. So the barriers, one of the barriers is the entrepreneurism, or the encouraging people to get into the business. It's become so complicated, so risky that, and of course, we went through the downturn. Of course, after any downturn, who gets into the business? So we have to create, I've said this before, whether it's right or not, we have to make this business sexy again. We have to get people interested in becoming builders and developers. And we don't need, in our community, we don't need one 200 unit project. We need 10, 20 unit projects. We need 10 young entrepreneurs that are going to try to produce some of this housing that we need. And that's the no-brainer. We know what we need. If we can produce it, it's going to sell. So as soon as we can figure out a way to make a profit creating the housing that we need, our issue goes away. So that's our biggest barrier. How do we create that housing in the price ranges that we need? And that all in one is going to be a huge challenge going forward, even worse. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Mr. Paradise, for your testimony, and certainly coming from Rochester, appreciate your perspective and the need for affordable housing. Sort of connected to Representative Hewitt's question and comments, I'm wondering if you could speak to, are there any products or avenues or tacks you're taking to get at that affordable housing, workforce housing, patio homes, for instance, that you could speak to just briefly?
Mr. Paradise.
Madam Chair and members, we currently are doing, like I said, we have 33 different subdivisions. So from an affordability standpoint, density is going to help. So as we could produce twin homes, fourplexes, sixplexes, as far as your active older buyer, they don't like shared walls, but we're doing more and more villas where it's a smaller lot. Still a same size footprint, but no basements, accessible entries, larger hallways, larger doors, creating housing that they could possibly age in place. And the biggest barrier, and I believe Representative Hoyt brought this up, is cost. So a lot of these people are moving out of a 4-bedroom home and selling it at a price that doesn't cover the purchase of the new villa. The new construction is more expensive than what they're coming out of. And there's that psychological block that I don't have a mortgage. Why do I want one now? And even after I show them, the energy savings will more than pay for the difference in their prices. It's a mental block that I can't spend more at this time. But as the needs happen, you see more and more people moving. And unfortunately, those are the ones I don't like, when it's they're moving into an accessible home because they've already had a health issue. But there's a public education going on, and in the past 6-7 years, we've created more accessible housing than I did in the rest of my career combined. So there is a movement towards it, and there is a finally an acceptance of some of the pricing on it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bolden. Oh, who was that? I'm sorry.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I had a discussion with some builders in St. Cloud yesterday, and they shared that Stearns County is somewhat embracing the idea of a granny home, basically, that's outside of the home, but keeping multi-generational housing together going forward, so that we've got pockets that people are trying to figure it out, but certainly some state assistance and guidance would really help.
Well, there, yeah, and basically there are a number of options like the granny home. I think it was at Burnsville City Council about a year or two ago where they had people are taking regular homes and kind of separating them for the generations coming forward, the tiny homes, but getting my understanding is getting the zoning for some of those to take place is a major barrier. And those are things that we really need to address, because they seem, at least to me, they seem fairly logical as we're going forward, because I do see more and more families merging, which that's the way it used to be. So I think it's really a great move. But thank you so much for bringing that forward. Let's see, Representative Burr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One last question for Mr. Paradise. It's my understanding that the City of Rochester has done some work to assist builders like yourself get some of those affordable housing subdivisions across the finish line. And just from a policy perspective and how cities can assist financially, what are some of the assistance that you can think of from the city perspective? What does that look like to you? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Paradise.
Madam Chair and members, a couple of things. First of all, zoning that was brought up by Madam Chair also. A lot of these ADUs aren't allowed in the zoning areas. As they talk about higher density, villas, narrower lots, a lot of communities don't allow that yet. Most of them are working on it. Rochester's working on it. But once again, that wheel moves pretty slow. So it's getting that product to market that becomes an issue. As far as some of the assisting in some of the cost items, you know, it could be as simple as a lot of these communities charge all the fees up front. So from a developer standpoint, unless you're in pretty good shape, you're borrowing an incredible amount of money to pay all the fees, all the inspection costs before you've even stuck a shovel in the ground. So maybe communities could share in some of the risk. We're not, you know, not necessarily asking for the fees for nothing. It'd be nice, but I understand that whole process just doesn't work out. But maybe sharing in some of the risk, and if it's a product that meets some of the some of the needs of the community that aren't being met, maybe there could be something where those fees are paid at the very end, maybe when the builder or developer closes with the homeowner. I think there's a lot of creative ideas. And I think the main thing is to have both your building community and your leadership in that community work together to create some of these solutions. So we just got to get everybody at the table and start talking about the same thing. First, you need to identify the needs of the community, though. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any follow-up, Representative Burke?
Okay. No, thank you. I appreciate your candor, Mr. Paradise. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Are there any last questions before we adjourn? Seeing and then, again, thank you to all of our guests today.
Thank you.
Have a good day, everyone. We are adjourned.